Hi and welcome to Outthink. I'm Lawrence Akers. I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, member of the LGBTQIA community, and a passionate advocate for mental health. These podcasts have been made in the hope of sharing insight into issues that impact on the LGBTQIA community. Today, we're talking with Sally Goldner. Sally is Executive Director of Transgender Victoria, Treasurer of Bisexual Alliance Victoria, co-facilitator of Trans Family, and has been, dare we say, a pioneer in the local LGBTQIA community for her work in bringing awareness to the transgender community. Sally, welcome for coming today.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, today we're looking at life as a transgender person. I guess I wanted to start really looking at what are some of the main issues that the transgender community faces today.
Yes, so main issues that trans and gender diverse communities face usually can be put under four broad headings, and then with lots of dot points underneath. Mm. So in no particular order of preference, one is documentation and forms. At the time of our conversation, only one of Australia's eight states and territories allows to have birth certificates on what I'll call an affirmed or identity basis. Mm-hmm. So the other seven are still on a surgery basis, although there have been some high court cases that have also put some chinks in that. Also for minors, there's only one state or territory, and it's the ACT that's leading the way on all counts, that allows changes for minors, of course, with parental / guardian approval. Mm-hmm. That has got rid of the issue of forced divorce, which affects relationships involving trans people on some occasions, and has a reasonable mechanism for change. It does involve getting a letter from a doctor saying, I've known this person for X amount of time and their sense of gender identity is dot, 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 whatever. And also the ACT, importantly, allows for other than male or female, which in the last 2 years or so, we've had two research reports in Australia finding a third of the trans and gender diverse cohort identifying as other than male or female, non-binary, agender being some of the labels used. So the legal side of it, but also forms, nothing more aggravating for particularly for non-binary people where you've got male, female, circle one. It's automatically a sense of exclusion. On the positive flip side, if a trans or gender diverse person sees gender blank line in brackets optional, that's got everyone covered. And for a service provider, including a health professional, big sign of inclusivity right off the bat. Mm. Second heading is anti-discrimination law. And in Australia, we're close to 80% covered, particularly since 2013 when we had a comprehensive addition to federal law covering gender identity. It covers non-binary, it's very simple language, and because of the Constitution, where federal law overrides state if there's two similar areas of law, it's filled in some gaps in the bricks at state and territory level, but we still would like to see the states and territories update their definitions of gender identity to the same as the federal law. We've still got some exceptions, like similar to gay, lesbian, bi, we're affected by religious exemptions. But trans and also intersex people in most states and territories are affected by sport exemptions. And since the International Amateur Athletic Federation did a very thorough inquiry and found that testosterone in itself doesn't lead to a competitive advantage, we think those exemptions need to be massively reduced, if not abolished. So that's what I'll call the legal side of discrimination. The third area is funding, in particular, to do education. If we had organisations around Australia that were able to go out and educate service providers, corporates, whatever, you'd find a lot of issues would disappear. And then that brings in a whole heap of other issues, trans people in custody, for example. Schools is covered by the Safe Schools program and similar work to other extent. And so that's sort of that third area is a bit of a catch-all. But I've deliberately kept the fourth area till last, and that's health and medical care, because that's obviously a huge relevance to what we're talking about. And I'll break that down into two areas. Specialist care, so that's for people needing hormones and or surgeries in particular, but also coming out. But also just the ability to go to any healthcare provider or service provider and get equitable service. And one of the big issues is what we call lab rat or guinea pig syndrome, where let's say you go to a doctor for your annual flu shot, it's a new GP, and they go, I've never met a trans person, tell me about that. And so you end up, you know, sort of having to spend your 20 minutes educating them. They then say, thank you, that's $70, but you'll get some of it back on Medicare.
Do you offer them your invoice back as well?
Well, we're beginning to be tempted to do that. But the thing is, you forget, oh, do I need to ask about, will I sneeze a lot after the flu shot or whatever, the last thing I claim to be as a doctor. But it's worse than that too, people being asked really intrusive questions, having some body parts about which they're sensitive. So let's say a trans woman who is on her way to surgery but hasn't had it yet, and someone just touches a part of her body that's not comfortable without asking first, which I understand doctors are trained to do for everything, but they don't often do it or forget or get arrogant or whatever. Similarly for mental health as well. And I think that, I think that people aren't educated on basics of how to deal with trans, so they can just be in the present moment for the trans person. Let's say it's a counselling situation and, I don't know, my neighbour's throwing rubbish over the fence and I'm stressed. I don't want to talk about being trans. I want to talk about why I'm stressed, or should I, complain to my local council or the police, you know, simple example. But we just don't want to be free learning curves. And in a sad scenario, in the last 2 days, prior to recording this, I actually had a call via Transgender Victoria from, I'll just say, a counselling tertiary institution, saying, I want a transgender person to practice on. And I was absolutely appalled. And at the time of recording, I haven't had a chance to get in touch with the institution or that sort of thing, but I'm absolutely staggered that that could be considered. And apparently it was part of an assignment. So that means the lecturer, etc., has done that. So that's a huge issue. Ultimately, we would want to go to any health professional in Australia and for all our issues. And what happens is people stop going. So let's say they injure themselves in sport. It's like, oh, God, do I have to go to the doctor and give a free education again? Oh, I won't bother about that sprained ankle, and it gets worse and worse and worse. So it's a big, big issue. And in terms of the mental health side, I deliberately left that one till last because it fits in so much with what we need to talk about today.
I think even what you said there offered me a fantastic insight, because I wouldn't have actually thought about the fact that as a transgender person, it's much the same way as for me as a gay man. Mm. I don't want to talk about being a gay man all the time.
Yeah.
It's a part of who I am as opposed to being the whole of who I am.
Gotcha.
How, in those situations, though, how do you tend to deal with that? What do you do to try to diffuse from that situation and to allow it to be brought back to whatever it is you wish to focus on?
Yeah. Well, I think it's not easy. I'm in a position where I can say, look, I appreciate that you want to learn about trans people. And I can say, well, one of the trans things that Transgender Victoria does is offer a fee-for-service education. I think you need to come to one of our sessions. But I'm here as a customer to talk about the neighbour throwing rubbish over the fence or whatever. And they might take that. But unfortunately, something that the trans community encounters both in terms of generalist and specialist issues is what we call medical arrogance, this idea of people, you know, sort of, we know best because we're a health professional. Oh, you're not going to help me, that sort of thing. And people trying to put guilt trips on. So it's not easy to be assertive sometimes in that situation. And particularly if a trans person may feel a bit raw and vulnerable, still tentative about their story. Now, some people may want to talk about it, but I think in terms of what I grew up with a dad in retail and learned what I call good old-fashioned customer service. Every customer in front of you is an individual. You work out what is going, you know, so they listen to them and they ask for whatever, and you say, well, let's see if I can supply that. Well, it's the same thing here. If I'm here to talk about my neighbour throwing rubbish over the fence, I'm not here to give the health professional a free education in trans. And so I think it's about a bit of respect for the client and on a few things that's been lacking for trans people. And on the physical side, there has been at times a very pathologizing and gender stereotypical approach to some of the treatments to go through to get hormones and surgery. A couple of years ago, there was the, let's call it the docudrama based somewhat on the life of Carlotta, where there was a scene where she had to walk in front of a panel in high heels, and it's like, what, does this prove you're female? I'm sitting here looking at my sensible shoes today. Give me a break. So that's been some of the issues, and it's unfortunately at times led to a bit of, well, a lot of antagonism between trans and gender diverse people and health professionals. And whilst I can't speak directly for trans men, often they were just totally ignored. Oh, you're just a butch lesbian. And, you know, there's still, I think, learning to do about non-binary, where people say, well, why do you only want to take, say, some hormones or not the whole dosage or whatever? And so there is a shift, thankfully, in the last year or so away from that sort of pathologizing attitude, but it will take time to uproot those attitudes on the physical side of things and sort of build trust.
Correct. Would it be okay if we talked about your own story?
Sure.
Let's go back to when you were younger. Tell me a little bit about what it was like to grow up.
Yeah. Well, gosh, where to start? So I'm just gone 51. And so when I was, you know, so I'm born in 1965. I don't think trans was even on the map at all then, really. Maybe a few people had heard of Carlotta and Lay Girls, that sort of thing, but that's about it. And so I always say that the first 4 years of my life, four and a bit, all good. You're hanging out with kids of your parents' friends, your cousins, spend a year at a kindergarten, which I'll say in today's language would be all genders. Everyone's there. You think, oh, well, there's just lots of people in the world. I found out I got a rude shock, let's say, on my first day at school, because I walked up to the door of the prep classroom and I looked in and didn't see anyone like me, even if I couldn't explain it that way back then as a four and a bit year old, because I spent all of my 13 years at school at an all-boys school. And so instantly there's that sense of either isolation or what's wrong with me? Why don't I fit in here? Yep. Why didn't I like sport? And this school had a huge emphasis on sport, which I only found out about a year ago after the principal passed away and there was an obituary in The Age. And it was like, oh, but I'm supposed to be good at sport. I'm supposed to be a football hero or the next Tom Bradman or something. So there's all those feelings of feeling wrong, of feeling judged. In one sense, you're isolated. On the other hand, you're exposed as being different, which is this huge paradox. And I just never fitted in either as a male or even as, I'll say, a masculine male in terms of gender expression. There was also something else that rolled its way along, which I think is important to look at the whole person. I'm someone of two Jewish parents. What happens at the age of 13?
Right.
Clang, yeah. Bar mitzvah, the coming of age of a Jewish boy into a man.
Wow.
Didn't quite resonate. Yet again, you're thinking, why doesn't this have the meaning? But of course, there was nothing with which to connect. So we've gone through, if I'm 13, we're now at 1978. And I mean, in 1972, we had that amazing moment on Australian TV where Joe Hashem in number 96 said, but homosexual. Okay, we'd got a bit of gay stuff going, but still wasn't any visibility of trans. And I know it seems hard to think about nowadays, but there wasn't any internet or social media either. Couldn't send a telegram saying, I don't feel like I'm like everyone else. So you just go on. I finished school. I went to uni, did commerce majoring in accounting, worked as an accountant. And I think things began to shift when I got to just before 30, because I decided I'd been working for a corporation as second in charge of a division of a business unit, second in charge of the accounting for that business unit. I had a very difficult manager. I was burnt out. I decided to travel for 3 months. And I found talking to a lot of LGBTI plus people that when you travel and all the day-to-day stress eases off, and yes, you may go on a Kentucky tour and have a few beers, but I never said that. you ease up. And so the stuff that's been pushed down, whether you meant to or not, whether I realised I was doing it or not, it starts seeping up.
Yeah, yes.
And that did. And I remember walking through the markets in Tijuana, Mexico, just over the border, and I was, still, of course, identifying as male, and I sort of very subtly plucked up this courage. We were looking at some jewelry, and she was looking at some jewelry, and I said, "How do you think those earrings would go on me?" And she said, "Yeah, they'd go well with that little black number you've been dying to wear." And that was the first I'd even remotely even hinted. And of course, she had no idea. She was just someone on the tour, never saw her again. But it did, I think, mean I was something was wanting to come out. And then on New Year's Day, after I was back in Australia, I actually told someone about how I'd always seen myself and thought about myself in terms of identity and expression. And that blew the lid off. If we're talking mental health, at that point, I had a very difficult experience for the next 3 months. I got a referral from my suburban GP to a psychiatrist who really didn't have, at a minimum, didn't have a clue about transgender issues, which is still sadly often the case, as we discussed. But at one point she said, so at this point, the school first day at school memory wasn't quite there, but I do remember things when I was six. She said, so you first remember this when you were six. What was happening in your life then? She was trying to sort of link it to that, which is an element of conversion therapy or reversion therapy. And that made things worse because then your mind's thinking, oh, there's something that caused it. But of course there isn't. We all know our sexual orientation and or gender identity is innate. It's just us. And thankfully I'd also confided in a friend, and if it wasn't for that friend, I would not be here. The friend, and I'm keeping it very de-identified, came out to me as bi. I was only one of three people on the planet who knew the person's current, at that point, current opposite sex partner in the language of that time, the previous same-sex partner and me. So it was probably a lifesaver to connect, even though I wasn't dealing with bi issues at the time, to connect to someone GLBTI-ish. And in the end, we tracked down a psychologist who identified as part of the LGBTI community, had done her master's in sexuality and gender, and just gave a definition for me as someone assigned male at birth. I remember her words pretty exactly. Some males are more feminine than masculine. Some need to be female. That's called transgender. Now, that was a pretty good definition for me at that time, and obviously we'd have a more expanded one now. But the light bulb came on. So for once, it wasn't, oh, I'm not wrong. I'm okay with who I am. And I did get to a point of self-acceptance very quickly. I remember driving away from that appointment and I had to pull over. My mind was just reassembling things so quickly I couldn't focus on the road. So I did the right thing and pulled over. Hi to the Glow Unit if you're listening. But, and I remember in the midst of that saying, gee, I went a long way down by going against this. I wonder what would happen if I went with it. Well, I won't say the rest's history, but that was the turning point. With hindsight, I'd accepted myself and also had the ability to trust and have faith, which I don't really think I'd had before. And so that's really where I got to the point of fitting into the broad T umbrella. The next part was 97, where I'd always thought of myself as attracted to women only, and because I was identifying as male at that point, that meant heterosexual, but I sort of had an image in my mind of, oh, I could be with a guy. And because of my friend who'd helped me, I didn't have a lot of trouble coming out as bi, which is not typical. I would hasten to add, so many bi people, and I'm going to say still largely of all ages, are facing a lot of biphobia, which I want to talk about.
We actually even discussed that in a recent episode on the sexual fluidity and the stigma that it's attached to bisexual, but definitely let's discuss that again after. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah. So I didn't have a lot of trouble coming out as bi. There wasn't a group. The only group that existed at that time was a group called Melbourne Bi Youth, and I think, where was I then? I'm 32, but they said, we're not going to check your age passport at the door. They were wonderful people and gave a bit of connection. And then the last parts of the trans journey were 98. I realised I needed to live full time. If there was a facade, if you like, of trying to identify as being male or expressing in masculine ways, it had just dissolved what society had forced onto me. I'd sort of pushed it away, broken through it. And I really have identified as female since 1998. The last time I ever really felt I had to identify as male, I remember, it was a great aunt's 80th birthday in the middle of 1998, and for that was the last time I pulled out the tux and the shiny shoes and that sort of thing and went along with family as male. I've kept the tux. It's great for drag king. It's a good tux too.
So even within the LGBTQIA community, there seems to be a lot of misunderstandings around transgender and bisexual community. Yep. And concerns about political correctness to ensure people feel respected for who they are, and how do you... The etiquette that's around that as well. Perhaps if I can get you to comment a little bit on... Because really, I guess I'm raising two topics there.
Yeah.
Both the etiquette around transgender and the stigma around biphobia.
Yep. Okay, so trans people, overwhelmingly, we would... If you're not sure about the pronouns we use, we would much prefer... like people to say, look, I want to respect who you are, which pronouns, if any, do you use? And we're quite okay with that. And you know, some people don't know, but if they're going to get it right, and then it's like logic says ask. And I know some trans people might listen to this, a few might say, well, what do you flippin' think? I don't really think that's on. If people aren't sure, then at least let them ask, and so long as they're making the best effort they can to get it right, that's okay.
I think it comes down to the intention in which it's been asked or displayed. If there seems to be a genuine desire to be respectful.
Yeah, then go with that and value it. Similarly, sometimes you might honestly, ... a million times honestly think you know. And particularly, I suppose this would happen for people identifying in non-binary ways. Let's say the person, the gender diverse person is referred to as he or she, and they go, no, look, I use they, them, theirs pronouns. Just one slip is fine, and if you get it right thereafter, then let's all move on, and we're okay about that. But I agree with you on the intent. I remember an incident that happened to me once. It was sadly at a midsummer event happening at a mainstream venue where, at that point, midsummer I don't think was briefing venues well enough. They do that very well now. And the bar person referred to me as he, and I said, look, I just said casually, which I always say, oh, look, I use female pronouns. Oh, you're she, are you? And got this really sarcastic response. Not good. So that's not on. But if a genuine slip or asking to be really clear and respectful, I'm okay with that. And I think most trans and gender diverse people are. So that's one thing. But the other thing which we touched on in some of the medical stuff, if people don't want to talk about their trans journey or don't want to talk about it that day, some days we might, some days we might not want to. So, as you said, parallel to your sexual orientation, then we don't want to talk about it. But some days we will. But other things, let's say it's a workplace, and whether the person's trans or it's a family member of a trans person and the trans person's just come out, just doing the thing you'd do for anyone else. You know, let's say you'd heard that a person's partner has, say, having a bout of cancer or something. Just check in and go, how you going or something, or, you know, just be cheerful, you know, keep including them. And that's, I think, just as valid as well. So just being affirming and supportive, that sort of thing. And that's not just in a workplace, I suppose, but it could be anywhere. Just being, as a friend of mine in the trans community says, it's nice to be nice. So, you know, that sort of thing as well. And just being there as a friend, the same as you would for anyone who's going through what could be a challenging time for a lot of trans people. You know, the journey is challenging, but it's also, of course, amazing. I do remember after I got to that point in 98 and started taking hormones, the joy of seeing my body become what I'd always hoped it would be was quite awesome. So enjoy the ride. Some trans people, I understand the destination's important, particularly if there's a surgery focus, but you know, live in the present moment, I think, and to see my body become what I'd always wanted it to be was quite an enjoyable thing, and lock in that feeling, I suppose, would be the important stuff. So in terms of my trans journey, that's pretty much covered it. The bi journey, as I said, I was in the, I have to say, exceptional or one-off position of feeling pretty comfortable, and I suppose you could say the first part of my trans journey was a pretty good learning curve. And so, yeah, tapped in, and then later on a group called Bi Victoria formed. That's since finished, and now Bisexual Alliance Victoria exists. But it wasn't until, and we've touched on this, the issues arose within the LGBTI community, I started seeing and hearing all this biphobia. And an early one that stuck in my mind, in 1999, there was a festival of so-called Jewish LGBTI films, or it might have been billed as Jewish, Gay and Lesbian. And there was a scene of some New York Jewish lesbians who were wanting to have a party, and they get a, as you do in those days, a voicemail message on a landline. hey, my friend's bisexual, can she come? And they just look at each other, hang up and laugh at each other, and the whole audience laughs with them, which I just was thought was appalling. And I was quite stunned. And then I started hearing other things against bisexuals, and what got me, it was the same sort of prejudice that gays and lesbians had often experienced from the broader community. Oh, you don't really exist. And then the specific ones, make up your mind, get off the fence. Well, we have made up our mind. We're just attracted to people regardless of gender.
This fence-sitting mentality that exists, and it's absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
It's absolutely ludicrous. And I think the big issue bi people face, and to some extent non-binary trans, possibly intersex, although intersex isn't, of course, right down the middle. There's all sorts of variations. It's we live in a very binary world, you know, night or day, black or white sort of stuff. Well, bi people aren't. Maybe some people find that challenging, because there are some people who are identifying as gay and lesbian but could be more attracted to more than one gender to whatever degree. One of the others sort of stereotypes about bi is, well, unless you're exactly 50-50, you're not really bi, you're either heterosexual or gay or lesbian. Well, that automatically only assumes two genders, and so there's all that stuff. But there's also bi erasure in a sense that if someone who will say appears to be male is walking down the street with someone who appears to be female, they're both assumed to be heterosexual, where one or both of them could be bi. Yeah. And so there's that issue as well. But to be honest, we're struggling at the moment, even though we have a very good government and commissioner. We still feel at times like people forget to consult us, as if we're still being erased. And there is a bit of concern about that at the policy level as well, that maybe we're not, we're still not treated as equal. I think there's almost sometimes in our community, it's sort of 48 font G, 24 font L, maybe 12 font T, but then barely 8 font B and I. And I think that's not equal or equitable. And it sometimes feels for me, slipping in the advocacy part of it, that I'm constantly doing 101, even at higher levels, and facing privilege and people talking for me as bi and or trans without checking in on the sort of language we need to use. Or they say, oh, look, I was in a hurry, so I just asked someone in my office about what to use. It's like, hang on, but is that person trans? No, well, they can't speak for us. And that's a real worry. It's still there. Trans is generally getting better. Trans women, a lot more visibility. Still need more visibility for trans men and non-binary. Still people, as I say, getting their heads around that a lot. But bias, I wish I didn't have to say it, but the reality is it seems further behind. So I suppose it's just push, 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 persist and keep banging down doors.
I can imagine for people listening that are bi and trans as well, that there must be feelings of frustration, anger, alienation, isolation. It must be really tough for them to help to push through that, to get that self-acceptance when they're constantly getting these messages coming through that they're not equal in that sense.
Yeah, it's a double whammy, if you like. And whether you just whether you are an individual trying to live your life, whether you're an advocate doing it, it can be really frustrating. And there's unfortunately some organisations who claim to be LGBTI but are very 1990s in their approach. They talk for people. They don't give bi and trans people a real sense of ownership, or they're outright condescending at times. And that's a real worry, that we've got these sorts of elements at times in the entrenched power positions. Parallel, we hear in society about the rich old white men sort of thing, and I don't want to generalise. I've had plenty of supportive people of all sorts and take people on their merits, but at times we do have an element in our society, in the rainbow community, of this, white, cisgender, monosexual, gay men thinking they run the show. And it's problematic and it's frustrating, particularly when, they have copped discrimination. You'd hope there'd be some empathy, but sometimes there isn't.
And so thank you for everyone for listening today. Be sure to check out our podcast for the next issue, and we shall chat to you then. Take care.